best thing about franchising, there should be zero surprises whatsoever when you get into it because all the information is public. You can go to the state of Wisconsin or the state of Minnesota Secretary of State websites or departments of franchise compliance, and you can find all the franchise disclosure documents on there. And then on those documents, you can find the names of every single owner or the owner's entity names, and you can reach out to them and have these great diligence conversations about what the brand is about.
Hey there, I am Dr. Jason Ballara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast, where we explore the why behind success. Every week, I meet with real estate investors, veterinary entrepreneurs, mindset coaches, authors, and fitness professionals to uncover their why and how it drives them on the winding road to success. What is your why?
Hi, everyone. I'm Jason Ballara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast. Today, I'm here with Reid Tileson. He's an adjunct professor, investor, board member, successfully exited operator, researcher, and author. He's the author of the upcoming bestseller, Grit It Done, Self-Funded Entrepreneurship Through Acquisition. Reid, I'm going to stop there. First, I just want to say thank you. Thanks for taking the time out today to come talk to me. I'm super excited to kind of hear about you and your background and what you got going on. So thank you very much.
Yeah, no, Jason, thank you so much. Absolute pleasure to be here. And thank you for the introduction. Yeah, high level California guy originally. And then in my early 20s, had a little bit of money saved up and got in the world of entrepreneurial business ownership. So I went out in the Central Valley. I was an Anytime Fitness multi-unit owner operator, went to business school, went out and bought an industrial services business in the Midwest. So I'm just a small business enthusiast and advocate. I think that, you know, it's a great way to have freedom, and the entrepreneurial business ownership lifestyle is a fantastic way to go. So I've been doing it successfully for 16 years. I teach it. And what I ultimately decided to do is write a book on it. It's just a great, efficient, cost-effective first step in the process. The book is called Grit It Done, The Low-Risk Guide to Entrepreneurial Success. And you can check it out at grititdone.com. My high level in life is, I think the utility for me to, you know, answer the question of know your why. Frankly, I just like taking on challenges and doing hard things. And, you know, I like to surround myself with people that push me to bring out my ideal self and my best self. And when I find myself taking on challenges with the right people and doing hard things, I go all in, and then I really enjoy the journey. And I found that particularly in the years that I've been a entrepreneurial business owner and operator. So thank you so much for having me. I did have a question for you, though. I was checking out your logo for your podcast. It looks like a mix of roots and lightnings. Like the logo really fascinated me. How did you decide upon that? Can you kind of walk me through what the thinking was and what the symbolism is there?
Yeah, I mean it. Well, I didn't design it, so I'll give that credit to my podcast producer, and he's a graphic artist too. So I won't take credit for it. But we were just looking. We changed it. It used to be. The logo used to be a little bit different, but really is just kind of meant to give the impression of, you know, sort of life and growth in my case, you know, and my guests, I guess, if you will, for the podcast is just growth through business, real estate, you know, kind of and also just we talk a lot about mindset and things like that. So it just resonated with me. We decided to change it up. I can't remember exactly how long it's been, but we decided to change up that logo. And I'll give him all the credit, but he came with a couple of different sort of concepts to begin with. And I just gave my feedback, and ultimately that's what we came up with. So all the credit to Mark. Mark's fantastic, and does I wouldn't have a podcast without him. So I'll put it that way. He's been very instrumental in the whole thing. So yeah, no, it's a pretty cool logo, and I think one of those things that you can probably let it mean whatever it means to you, you know, kind of as the viewer or listener.
Yeah,
that's my take on
it. Because when I saw it, what first resonated to me was, what are the roots of my life? What really drives me?
Yeah.
And the ultimate answer to that, as I was looking at your podcast, was it's the relationships. And whatever I do, it's the people that I meet along the way that always gives me that highest level of fulfillment. And one way that I found that in the world of small business is that when I reflect back, it's what I'll call entrepreneurial employees, right? And those are the kind of people that if you didn't know any better, you would think that they were the owner of the business. You know, they're so into it. It's their life, and they take it really seriously. And they're just the best part, right? The ability to invest in them, to push them, to help them. And even, you know, it's enjoyable while you own the business. And we all know that people are both the biggest pleasure and the biggest sources of pain. Let's be crystal clear. But the crazy part for me is that the relationships were strong and they obviously grew, you know, when I was a business owner, but it's how they lasted in the years after that I sold the business. It's really been the surprising and interesting thing to me. One of my team members, you know, it's kind of a funny story, is that, you know, this particular team member was not into getting the COVID-19 vaccine right back in the day, just not his style with field service business. So then a few weeks ago, well, not a few weeks ago, over Christmas break, I got the flu vaccine for the first time in a number of years. That I ended up ironically getting the flu. And the first person I texted about that was my, you know, old general manager of this business, to kind of joke about the perils of, you know, vaccines, right? Sure, not that I believe one way or another on it, but it's all about those relationships. So your logo got me thinking through that.
Cool. No, Mark will hear this because he produces the podcast, but I'm sure he'll be happy to hear that you were struck by it. So I think it's really cool, and again, allows you to have your own, I guess, interpretation of what you take away from that that picture. But to retell me, I think a lot of people are, you know, on the podcast, we speak to a lot of entrepreneurial people. A lot of them are in real estate. Relatively recently been talking more about businesses, and they've been actually particularly fascinating to me. Why did you choose, you know, kind of, why did you choose to go the route that you went when you, you know, sort of decided, you said you started with some Anytime Fitness. And so that's a franchise model. Maybe talk to people a little bit about why you chose what you chose. And then I'd love to kind of talk about the differences between owning franchise versus, you know, sort of standalone business.
In 2007, I went to a happy hour at San Francisco's second oldest pub, a place called the Old Ship Saloon. It has a mast of a ship that actually sunk during the gold, or during 1851, during the gold rush. It's a really cool place. And at that point in my life, I was working in finance, and I'd saved up about $100,000. Okay. And I was trying to figure out what exactly I wanted to do next. I went to UC Berkeley for my undergrad, so go Bears. With that said, though, you know, let's say I just didn't get into the electrical engineering program or computer science program. So I didn't think I was going to go to Silicon Valley and have the next, you know, big, sexy startup. And I was at this happy hour with two private equity pros, and we started talking about, you know, what are some lower risk ways to think about being an entrepreneur. And one of those is of course, to go out and buy an existing business. Another one is franchising. And I was lucky because at that time, these two individuals were looking at buying franchisor concepts, one of which was Anytime Fitness. But in doing that diligence, they'd started to look at how these individual locations did, and they could be pretty lucrative. Now, I had no idea, you know, what I was doing. I hadn't ever run a business before. So I went out into the Central Valley. First club was a learning experience. Other ones thereafter were very successful. But I came down this path through thinking through how to be a business owner, how to be an entrepreneur, how to do it in a low risk way. So to directly answer your question, I'm a huge proponent of franchising. $787 billion of the US comes through franchising. It employs a good portion of the population. It's just a great way to take a model that already works, right? And, you know, buy into it, pay the franchise fees, and learn at its core how to be a business owner. I think that franchising is great. It's an excellent first step, and it can lay the groundwork for doing more interesting things going forward.
Yeah. And so you mentioned kind of the franchise fees. Like, from a return perspective, do you feel like that's going to be, I mean, maybe the learning that you're getting, the support that you're getting helps improve your returns for that reason, despite, you know, whatever fees might go along with it. So I'm genuinely intrigued about how that all works, because again, like I said, something very interesting to me.
Yeah, totally. The way that I think about it when it comes to franchising, and I do a lot of like consulting and coaching for people that want to go down this route, the key is you just have to find what the right franchise is. And the best thing about franchising, there should be zero surprises whatsoever when you get into it, because all of the information is public. You can go to the state of Wisconsin or the state of Minnesota Secretary of State websites or departments of franchise compliance, and you can find all the franchise disclosure documents on there. And then on those documents, you can find the names of every single owner or the owner's entity names, and you can reach out to them and have these great diligence conversations about what the brand is about. You talk to the happy owners, you talk to the unhappy owners, and you talk to everything in between. You also have access to the franchisor's financials. So franchising is really cool because you can get this unrivaled access to information to conduct diligence, which makes it that if you actually do that or work with someone that can do it for you, you can make it such a low risk endeavor. And another thing about being an entrepreneur, which I'm thinking a lot of your listeners can probably relate to, is that it can be a lonely path. I mean, let's be crystal clear. If you want to go out and find a business to buy, it can be a lonely path. I think a key thing, which I talk about a lot in the book, is the power of peer groups. I'm personally a member of EO. I'm also a member of other masterminds through business school and things like that. Having that peer group is critical. One great thing about franchising is that they will build a community for you, you know, through the conferences that you go to, through having the network of other owners. That makes the process a lot less lonely than it would be if you were a traditional business owner or, you know, an entrepreneur. So franchising is great from that perspective, but I just quite frankly think about it as, yeah, you're paying the franchise fees. There's all kinds of, you know, sexy things around kickbacks from preferred lenders and a lot of ways that franchisors make a lot of money. And let's be clear, Jason, being a franchisor, I think, is a much better business model than being a franchisee. But with that said, though, yeah, it's a great way to learn how to be a business owner. It is a fantastic first step. And by the way, you know, private equity has been involved in franchising on the franchisor perspective for a very long time. What's happening now, though, I shouldn't say now, really in the last 10-ish years, private equity investors, as they get, you know, more money and more dry powder, are actually franchisees these days. Some of the top concepts out there that you'd see, one example being Planet Fitness, we're not about the fitness space. A lot of those franchise units are actually owned by private equity firms. And private equity firms, you know, pretty sophisticated investors, and they see the upside in doing that. So yeah, I think franchising is fantastic. And the key to it too is that there's very low-cost franchises that have almost no barriers to entry. There's also very high-cost franchises that have all kinds of barriers to entry, whether it be industry experience, certain capital requirements, whole nine yards. So franchising, it is a linchpin of the American economy. It's a linchpin of what I think makes America fantastic. So I think it's a great option for people that want to go down this route. The key is just, one, do the deep diligence. There's franchise consultants out there you can work with. Do the deep diligence, find the right fit for you, and be willing when you buy the franchise. It can turn into absentee income years down the road, for sure, if you get the right management in place and you follow the systems. I tend to think, though, and I don't have any academic research to back this up, it's just based on anecdotal personal experience, the most effective franchisees are ones that spend some time in the trenches, learning the business, learning what it takes to actually run it, because then they can hire the right people, they know the customers, they know the model, then you can make it absentee income, which I think is a lot of people's dream, a lot of people's American dream. So I think that going into franchising, thinking about it from an investment and a lifestyle standpoint, great way to go.
Yeah, that's great. I love that perspective. Like I said, very interesting to me, and I don't really know about, you know, kind of the franchise side of things. You've mentioned a couple times just doing the diligence. When you are looking to acquire a business, what sort of diligence process do you use as, you know, sort of your, and I'm sure it's probably a little different per business, but do you have some standard things that you like to do as part of your diligence?
I like to be as thorough as possible. And I think of diligence as being on a scale of 11 out of 10. So even no matter how much diligence you do, particularly if it's not a franchise, when you get in the trenches, you're gonna discover there are certain things that were missed in the process, right? It's almost a universal rule of business acquisitions, I would say at least. You want to get as close as you can. In the book, I outline a tool that I use for any acquisition called the double diamond. I think it's important to have a framework that systematically thinks about certain criteria, whether it be industry, competition, customer concentration, whole nine yards, you know, repeat revenue, whole nine yards from there. The key is to have a framework to go with. And the other key to a framework is that even if you're an individual that wants to buy a business, you cannot just take the results of the framework and bounce them off yourself, because it leads to all kinds of biases, right? So have a quantitative framework, one of which is in the book, but there's plenty of other ones out there. And then do your best to shop it around to a variety of people. And don't shop it to like an intermediary that has a, you know, upside and you closing the deal, but bring it to people that actually care about you and can genuinely give you feedback, you know, other investors or people you know in the space or their business owners, they can give you feedback on the opportunity that you're actually looking at. Now, having a framework is key. Again, there's one in the book. Having just a starter list of things of diligence is key. There's also a starter one in the book, but you have to take that and you have to align that to the individual industry and the individual company that you're working out, and go into it with a mentality that you want to leave no stone unturned, because whatever you miss during diligence is going to come back to hammer you when you're actually operating the business. And when you're operating, you got 28 million things to worry about: team member transitions, talking to new customers, the whole nine yards. Whatever you can knock out during diligence is critical. My personal style, I love to be as hands-on as possible. Fun story I tell in the book is that I was looking at getting into the addiction recovery space. I'm not an addict, okay? So I don't understand the space. So what I did to diligence it, as I had a deal under LOI and we were, you know, going back and forth, I was moving along an LOI letter of intent. I'm sure most of your listeners know what that means, but just to throw it out there.
Thank you.
I was past the letter of intent and I didn't really understand the space. I talked to people that were in it, you know, did those informational calls, but I want to get a personal perspective in it. So I just straight up reached out to a sober living house and I told them what I was looking to do. Said, I'm not an addict, but I want to think about investing in the space and I want to understand it. Can I like live in a sober living house for a couple of weeks? I'll pay to do it just to understand it. And I did. And I didn't end up doing the deal. I actually had a very cool life experience living there, which I could happily talk a lot more about. And I tell some fun details in the book.
Yeah.
But the key is, you know, these businesses, particularly small businesses, you know, less than 50 people, maybe 10, 20 employees, it's very personal. And the owner typically plays a hands-on role. So it's as critical as possible to get in there, especially if you don't have a lot of industry experience, and just get your hands dirty during that diligence process and uncover the maximum amount of stuff that you can.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. It's a good idea. It's a good idea to understand the business, to go in and move in for a little bit for something like that. It's makes a lot of sense.
You can envision how excited they were. Like, so let me get this straight. You want to buy a business, you don't have an addiction, but you want to pay us to be a part of this. It's like, yes, right, that is right. Correct. So it took a little bit of time and they were like, hey, we'll take your money, man.
I guess I'm a little surprised they would let that happen, but I suppose
to be honest, I was surprised too. But I just learned that if you don't ask for something that you want, you have what percent chance of actually getting it? I mean, zero. And I will also tell you that experience was very, I learned a ton. I learned a ton about people. I learned a ton about, I learned a lot. It was very fulfilling for me. And a lot of conceptions I had about individuals that have addictions got completely dispelled when I lived in there. And also too, it was really fun, quite frankly. It actually reminded me, I was in a fraternity during my undergrad years at Berkeley. It actually reminded me of fraternity life just without the alcohol and without the drugs, which was like a really interesting thing. I didn't think it was going to be so much fun to actually be a part of one of those communities.
Yeah. No, definitely a very cool life experience for sure. Do you have like a specific niche that you like to buy businesses within, or is it like if you were to come with a buy box, I mean, what is your kind of approach to finding new businesses to acquire?
Yeah, so there's what my personal approach is, and that's where I like to go to industries that A, I either have a lot of experience in, or B, I want to have a lot of experience in. So for me, I'm always going to gear towards fitness, franchising, industrial services, dirty businesses in general. That's where my experience is. And when I, particularly if I take on board seats in small businesses that I invest in, I want to make sure that I can add value in some way. But when it comes to other individuals, you just want, my guidance is you want to look at industries and businesses that you, Jason, were born to run. right? You were born to run that business. You obviously have a background being a vet, and I actually know a lot of people that have made a lot of money doing roll-ups of veterinary services on the private equity side. But you want to align it to either what your background is that will help you minimize the risk to it, or you want to align it to, you know, where you want to be in the future. So in the case that even if you go down this route of looking for a business to buy and it doesn't work out, you would have increased your network in the space. You would have met some interesting people. Maybe it'll lead to a cool investment opportunity. Maybe it'll lead to a cool job. And that's what step one in this process is fundamentally about, is self-assessment. It's outlined in the book. I created some cool survey tools. You can go to the website to check out griditdone.com. But you have to understand, first and foremost, one, in the world of buying a business, are you a business owner or are you an equity employee, which is what I would define as being a CEO? I'm not telling you that being a business owner is any better or worse than being a CEO, but you need to understand what that entails. And I'm going to tell you that the best way, in my opinion, to finance small business acquisitions is through the SBA. I mean, I'm a pretty small government person, but I'm a huge fan of the SBA and what they do for 7A loans. And if you're more on the real estate side, for 504 loans is absolutely fantastic. But it does come with, which is probably no surprise to your listeners, you're in real estate, a personal guarantee. So I always coach people to really figure out, are you actually okay with committing to an unconditional personal guarantee to go down this business ownership acquisition route? And again, all part of the assessment on there. So key takeaways is, one, either align it to something that you know already or align it to something that you are really interested in getting into. And those are some of the paths you can take to make this journey lower risk versus the alternative. Because the upside of being a business owner, I mean, the freedom and autonomy are fantastic. Gallup surveys every year Americans on competence of institutions. Small business owners get the highest. Last year, they got it at 65%. Religion's 32%. Congress is 8%. And maybe over the last decade, small business owners always rate the highest. So you're like the most popular person in America, okay? You have an unrivaled level of freedom if you do it right. In addition to that, the reason that, you know, I wrote this book is because there's lower risk ways to do it than being a startup entrepreneur. And I think a lot more people are thinking about it that way now. But it's just a great option to go. And it's not necessarily something that is only for people, because I teach this stuff to MBAs. I helped design the curriculum for it when I was a student at University of Chicago Booth School of Business. This is a great career track for MBAs, but it's also a great career track for non-MBAs and for your average American. I would tell you, and you can, you know, go to the website, read the book, griditdone.com. Check out some of the math in there. But if you're say you have the median wage in America, you're making $1,118 a week. Let's gross it up to 70K a year with the value of benefits. I would tell you that you could potentially be a lot better off both on the autonomy standpoint and the financial standpoint if you, you know, take $100,000, lever up like 90% leverage with the SBA, buy a business that's making $400,000 or $500,000 of adjusted EBITDA per year. You're going to be making more money than you did, you know, more than the 70K after your debt payments. And if you pay off the debt in 10 years, you're going to leave making very reasonable, making assumptions about low to no growth, same exit multiples you bought into. You could end that 10 years, you know, with like a nice seven-figure exit. And that's before you even start to talk about sexy things like growth. And I would tell you that in that process, in my experience and the experience I see with my students and others that have gone down this route, one, you're going to have more freedom than if you'd stayed at your job. Secondly, and this is a part that really surprised me in that process, is that as a business owner, uniquely positioned to be on the frontier of working to improve the lives of team members that you have, investing in them by doing things like getting a commercial driver's license or getting more certifications so you can make more money or getting additional training. So uniquely positioned to invest in your team members. Plus, I'm delving in academics right now. The paperwork in academics is like this high, but as a small business owner, it's like this high. So in being a small business owner, as you can relate to, I think it's impossible not to become more civic minded. So one, you get financial freedom if you do it right. And there's certainly hard work and luck involved in that. Two, great opportunity to invest in team members and help them. And three, you're going to become a better citizen along the way. So I think it's an absolute no-brainer for people to consider. Now let's be clear. The title of the book is Grit It Done. It's kind of like my mantra in life. This is not an easy path. It's a ton of hard work. A lot of things can go wrong, and they do, right? But with that said, relative to the other alternatives out there, if you follow the steps that I've outlined, it's a low-risk endeavor. So a lot of upside, low risk. That's why I get super passionate talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of great points. And I think, you brought up the SBA loan, and I was going to sort of touch on that with you, but I'm glad you mentioned it, because I do think there's real opportunity to use a high level of leverage in these businesses with those SBA loans. So you can kind of get into it at a lower, I guess, cash price point, if you will. But as you mentioned, there's some personal risk. So you're personally guaranteeing that loan. You just have to decide, you know, what risk level you're willing to take, and if that's something that you're comfortable with. And I love the part about sort of empowering team members. It's been something for me that I think I've always liked that aspect, whether even just as an employee with people that, you know, worked with me, or even as now a business owner, being able to kind of empower people to do what they do well, and grow and sort of become that sort of like a vital piece of what's going on. I think it makes your life easier as a business owner, but it also makes their life better and improved as you know, sort of feeling that value that they're providing. So I like that very much, and I appreciate that you mentioned that. I think it's an important piece that doesn't get listed in all the books and the social media and all the things that are great about owning businesses.
Oh yeah, people do it for the autonomy and the calendar control and that freedom that I talked about earlier. All I can tell you though is that for me personally, and a lot of others that I network with, and I just know they're in the space for that long, it's what really drives the fulfillment. And it's special. Now, people are a big source of pain. Right. I can tell you that, no doubt whatsoever. They are also the biggest sources of pleasure. And those few ones that I've been able to really have strong, resonant relationships with, they are what make this whole journey worthwhile. And as I mentioned earlier, the fact that I still have great relationships with them is just nothing. I'm pretty good at talking, but it's still almost things I can't even put into words how special that side of it has been. So I appreciate you mentioning that.
Yeah, no, I understand. I feel that way about my employees. So I think it's just a really nice, cherry on top of being a business owner. It really becomes such a fulfilling piece of it. So,
yeah. And the key too is that, you know, it comes to people when there's toxic operators, you know, toxic people on the team, it's so critical to get rid of them quickly, because what happens is like just even one bad team member can have such a negative effect on everybody. And if it's not dealt with quickly and thoroughly, then those really good team members that are both high performers and the ones you can get those relationships with, they don't want that either. And if you don't take care of the bad ones, you don't get the bad ones out of there, you're actually preventing yourself. There's a huge opportunity cost, because then the good ones will, one, get less motivated, and they'll leave as well. So I always think about good team members as consistently judging me on what my actions are. And if I almost think like in some ways I work for them, right? I have to make sure that I'm building the right culture in the business that's conducive to their growth, because culture at its core is what I as an owner enable. And there's a lot of autonomy and a lot of power in doing that. But so many successful businesses, you know, and it sounds a little bit sappy to say it, but culture, as illustrated through the people that work there, is, a in my opinion, a critical aspect to success.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that is so important, and unfortunately often overlooked, the importance of it. So I think what you said about, you know, people leaving, I think it's true. It's like you perpetuate your culture in whatever direction you want to push it, right? So if you're weeding out the bad seeds, if you will, then you're going to continue to grow that culture of you know, independence and autonomy and people that want to be there. And if you don't, it'll go in the other direction, because then those are going to be the people that stick around, the people that are sort of counterculture.
Yeah. And in all the business owner operator peer groups I'm a part of, I would estimate that about 70% of like the deep painful vulnerability work that we do as a group, right? And this is across a number of them, about 70%, maybe even 80%. It's about people issues, right? And it's oftentimes easy to give advice to somebody or just kind of know in the gut, because we don't always give advice in these things, right? Keep the container, that I just know with 100% certainty that your business would be so much better off if you just got rid of that person. You'd be happy, right? Your performance would go up. But it's really easy to see that from the outside. Yet I will tell you from my own personal experience, Jairus, that when it's me who has one of those people issues, I am just blinded. I choose to live in the state of denial about it, because having those conversations with people is difficult. It's challenging. I mean, I fear doing it. And the uncertainty of if I let them go, what's going to happen is, it's challenging. I don't want to face it. So it goes to the point which I just drill down on in the book, and I'll drill down on anyone who I work with or talks to me about this, is that it is critical to have the right people around you in this process, because left to your own devices, I will make a lot of mistakes, especially around the people. And peer groups can empower me to make what are the right decisions for the business, for me personally, to help get me out of my head and to help confront some of those biases that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. Well, Reid, I want to switch gears here and ask you the questions that I ask every guest. First, you touched on the name of the show is Know Your Why. You touched on this a little bit. I do always ask every guest, you know, kind of what is your why? And I just want to give you the opportunity to expand on that if you want to, or even reiterate. But I think it's just important for people to realize why, when people like yourself are having so much success, you know, what keeps them moving, because it's not always easy.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. It's interesting, I don't really think of myself as being successful. I'm always hungry for more, right? But it's critical, as I mentioned earlier, the whole why is about the relationships that get developed along the way. I find that when I do hard things and I go all into them, that I just always come out with a handful of what I'll call resonant relationships out of it. So to me, it is all about the relationships. My biggest sources of pleasure and fulfillment in life come from those strong relationships. And the biggest sources of pain in my life come from the not so strong relationships. So my why is unequivocally the relationships that come out of it.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's so important. Tell us something about yourself that isn't common knowledge, special skill, a hobby, something to let people know you better.
Well, I'm a California individual originally. My parents met in the late 70s at the starting line of a running race. My dad, who's 6'2", super fit, and his first cousin, Terry, who's 6'5", also super fit, tank top, short shorts, good portion of untrimmed body hair. It's the late 70s, right? Right. Pretty warm day by Northern California standards, so call it the mid-80s. They were worried about chafing. So back in the day, there was one way to prevent chafing back in the 70s, Vaseline. So they're lubing up their inner armpits, nipples, inner thighs with Vaseline. My future mother walks up. She's like, hey, guys, can I borrow some of your Vaseline? And then one thing led to another. So I'm an endurance athlete at my core. When I moved to Chicago for business school in 2013, I live in a high rise. And I started to run up the stairs because I thought it was a great workout. Stairs up, elevator down, especially when wintertime came. And I discovered there was this whole community of competitive tower climbers out there. No joke.
Oh, wow.
Hancock Tower, Empire State Building. So I got into this when I lived in the Midwest. And then right after I sold the industrial services business, I got introduced a couple years earlier to a run in Switzerland called Nissen Trumpenlauf. There's a funicular built in 1915 up the side of a mountain. It took the Swiss 85 years, and they had the genius idea to do a race up the maintenance staircase by it. 11,674 stairs, Jason, making it the longest staircase in the world. It's about a 7x on the number of stairs in the Empire State Building. So through some cool timing, I sold that business. Then I went a couple weeks later to go race up the world's tallest staircase. It was absolutely awesome. So after my next big life endeavor, I don't know how exactly I'm going to be able to top that. But stair climbing is fun because, I mean, the downside to it is that you're indoors, it gets kind of boring doing the same thing every day. But with that said, it's time efficient. You know, going up a 50-story building will probably take most good athletes, you know, 7, 10, 15 minutes. It's time efficient, it's very high intensity, and it's low impact because you're just not doing that many steps to get it. So one fascinating, I guess, ask or action item to your listeners is, of course, one, hey, gridofdone.com, check out the book. You can follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm active on both. Secondly, is next time that you're on the road or in a high rise, maybe you're staying at a 20-story hotel, for your workout, just go walk or run up the stairs. It'll be a cool experience for you, and especially cool if you're traveling to some place in the Midwest or another cold place where you maybe don't want to go outside and go for a run or something like that. So that's it's a fascinating fact about me.
I love it. That's amazing. I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know you could compete. I mean, I've done stair workouts. I think that you're exactly right. They're very, very efficient. You can get a really great workout in a pretty short period of time. But I didn't know you could race in that. So that's pretty cool.
You being a vet, you can take your dogs in the stairwells too. Man and woman's best friend can also play a role too.
That's right. You beat me to it. Usually I ask you, where can people reach you is kind of the next question. So if you want to just reiterate that, people, and we'll put it in the show notes too, but just so people know where to find you.
Yeah, you can go to gridofdone.com to get the book. I'm active on LinkedIn and Twitter, so feel free to follow me there and, go out there and whether it be now, whether it be at some point in the future, think about becoming an entrepreneurial business owner. It's a lot of cool things that come with it, and I am shameless now I promote it.
Perfect. Well, then we'll end it with this last question. What advice would you give to someone who hears this, they're excited and they want to get started? What next step should they take?
Yeah, go to... My honest guidance is go to gridofdone.com, it'll be 99 cents through the end of May, and the book launches on May 13th. Spend 99 cents and the 3 hours to read the book. It's the most cost-effective first step to go through in this process. Then after you've done that, if you want to talk to me, book a discovery call. The truth is I actually will do them with anybody because people did it for me back in the day when I was searching. But what I find is that most people they're not really prepared for the call. So it's not a good use of their time. It's not a good use of my time either. So spend literally the dollar and the 3 hours to read it, then book a call. And then we can talk about what the next steps are, whether you want to, get an MBA, right? Whether you want to take a course that I offer, whether you want to take a course that anybody else offers, right? Whether you want to do it on your own, but use this as a grace first step, because I just see the same mistakes that people make. And I see people that spend a lot of money going down this route when they haven't really thought through, is the right thing for me? How do I want to do this? So that's why I did this whole thing, right? Low cost, super efficient first step to do it. Because people pay me a lot of money to consult on this stuff. I obviously serve on boards. I do all those good things. But I really think that for that person that is making 70K a year, going down this route is fantastic. But just take it step by step by step by step. Books a great first step.
Yeah, awesome. Well, on that note, I will say thank you for your time. I really appreciate everything you shared with us. I'm sure people will be very interested in checking out your book. So thank you for your time today, Rita. This was awesome.
Great, I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
And folks listening, I know you're going to love this one. Please like, rate, and review the show so we can get more great guests like Reed. And thank you all for listening.
Hey there, I am Dr. Jason Ballara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast, where we explore the why behind success. Every week, I meet with real estate investors, veterinary entrepreneurs, mindset coaches, authors, and fitness professionals to uncover their why and how it drives them on the winding road to success. What is your why?